From the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Today on Around the Wood Stove, we are dedicating the entire show to a look back at Lancaster's 24-Hour Plays 2012. On November 2nd and 3rd, Wood Stove House, along with 35 writers, directors, actors, musicians, and crew, took over Community Mennonite Church of Lancaster's entire building on West Orange Street for 24 hours. Our goal? To write, rehearse, and then perform six brand new original plays for a triple-digit public audience. Steve Carlson and I co-produced the event with the help of my wife Suzanne and our good friend Jennifer Dunn. The 24-hour plays process is an incredible exercise in decision-making, problem-solving, organization, and of course creativity, all happening at an extremely quick pace. No matter how much we wish it would, the clocks just won't slow down during the 24-hour plays. Since their inception in New York City in 1995, 24-hour plays have been performed for audiences throughout the United States and around the world, attracting both professional and amateur theater artists. It's what we might call extreme theater. For an opportunity to perform in a public theater event, it's a fairly minimal time commitment for everyone involved, 24 hours at the most, but more like 12 hours or so for each participant. But it's definitely a huge commitment of courage, putting yourself and your creative work on the line in front of a public audience and your peers. After being part of two 24-hour plays productions in Lancaster, I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for everyone who throws their hat in the ring to take on the challenge. The creative energy and natural talent that kicks in during those 24 hours is nothing short of amazing. And here's how it went down this year. In the weeks leading up to the big weekend, Wood Stove House lined up six writers, six directors, 20 actors, and a small crew, including a musician to perform in between the plays, a stage manager, and a light and sound technician. On Friday evening, November 2nd at 8 p.m., we met in the sanctuary of Community Mennonite Church of Lancaster. The room had already been transformed into a temporary theater by Rod Shoemaker from Shoemaker Plan Design Transform. During the meeting, producer Steve Carlson set the stage for the weekend.
So here we are. We're at the meeting, the meeting here at 8 p.m. We hope to be done, well, it says 10 here, but we'll probably be done much earlier than that. So when we're done with this, after the introductions, we're going to send everybody home except for the writers. And the writers are going to, we'll talk with the writers briefly, kind of give them a sense of where to go and some things that we were thinking about as the project moves forward, and address any questions, and then they're gonna write. We've got some snacks and drinks and stuff for them to be here all night. I saw some couches down the hall, so if you wanna lay down, you just tell us before you lay down, so we can wake up if we don't see you for a while.
And then it was time for introductions. All participants introduced themselves and their roles, but actors went a step further and shared their experience and talents. Some got pretty creative.
Also, when I'm nervous, sometimes I put on a British accent, probably trying to become a very fierce Jane Austen heroine of some kind, and at times it's a problem because if I meet someone who I'm going to see again, at times I still don't know, should I have the accent? Should I admit it was a fake? I don't know what to do in that situation, but presuming you just want someone to speak in a normal voice, happy to do that as well.
There was an old woman and there was an old man. He laid upon a pallet, oh. He once sat as a jockey for his pay, and she was her mother's darling, oh. And on we go, and on we go. Can you recall the day we married, oh? On we go, and on we go. Wouldn't you be frightened to die alone? Come a little closer to your darling, oh.
Suppose, what would happen way back in history if you had a referee before every war and a guy called Toss? Right, let's go to the Revolutionary War. Captain Harbison of the British, this is Captain Solbus of the Settlers. Captain Solbus of the Settlers, Captain Harbison of the British. Call the Toss there, British. British going heads, it's tails. You lose the Toss, British, the Settlers win. What do you do, Settlers? All right, the Settlers say that during the war, they will wear any color clothes that they want to, shoot from behind the rocks and trees and everywhere. Says your team must wear red and march in a straight line.
It was critical for the writers to get a good sense of what the actors could do during that initial meeting because immediately afterwards the actors and directors were dismissed until morning, and the writers had to pick their actors. All actors had to be cast in one of the six plays, but no actor could be in more than one.
I know you want all the actors to be able to actually work, but obviously there are going to be some roles that are going to be probably fairly small roles.
There was a play last year where the speaking parts were ribbits and grunts. And so, whatever, you use them how you want to use them.
This girl and this guy and one of these two ladies, if possible. Okay.
Does somebody have a...
I don't want another man.
After they picked their cast, each writer found a comfortable workspace in the building and started creating. Some preferred isolation, while others preferred to work in a common space, the art gallery in the lower level of the church. After the coffee started flowing, Steve and I spent some time cleaning up the performance space, testing the lights and sound equipment, and getting ready to begin printing drafts of the plays. By 1 o'clock in the morning or so, we started hearing the rustling of writers. Most were wrapping up first drafts of their scripts, or at least they needed a break to stretch and refuel. Here's writer Renee Miller on getting started.
Was it hard for you to start?
Not as hard, no, actually. Because I spent 10 minutes staring at their pictures. And I think maybe because I didn't try to start typing right away, I just looked at their pictures for a while, kind of made some notes on Post-its. If I thought of some lines or something, I just kind of wrote that on a Post-it and stuck that here or there. And then, just started listening to that song. And I did not get the two actors, when we were sitting in the circle and, I was I instantly saw these two people together. And I wanted them. And I didn't get either of them. So that totally changed, what I had conjured up in my mind already just from hearing people talk in the circle.
Did those two actors end up in the same play with someone else?
No.
Okay.
In last year's production of the 24-hour plays, Renee was a director. We chatted about how much flexibility the directors feel they have, knowing that the writers will be at the public performance.
But, it'll be interesting because when we hand them over to the directors, I think we did this last year. It's I don't know if we had the discussion. Maybe it came out in the meeting, how much the director is beholden to the vision or what is on the page for the writer or how much they get to play with it. And I think we told them okay, you have your own vision. You get to have some fun too.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah.
And so it'll be interesting. I think that might have come through a little bit when all the writers came into the room. It was really fun watching the writers come into the room last year because they were all yay, this is all fun. Let's see what happens. Because it's really, it's not my responsibility anymore to do anything. Yeah. It's all these people who've been here all day, let's see what they did. And you could just see it. Those guys came in they were just high, on cloud nine, whatever. It's cool.
They were jazzed up.
They were totally jazzed up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it also depends on what kind of theater you like as a director. I love big openings. You know what I mean? So I have written Christina Aguilera's Fighter is blasting and character Danny is so into it, dancing all over the stage. His girlfriend comes in, she starts dancing, dude in the corner starts dancing, in my mind, it's big, but someone else could walk in and say oh no, we have to start small so we can build, you know?
So put them in headphones and you don't even really even know what's going on.
Yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
By 4 o'clock on Saturday morning, the scripts were nearing completion. We had participated in some of the readings so that the writers could hear their ideas out loud and move toward their final edits. Writer John Rohrkemper posed another interesting challenge. He wrote a micro musical with a song that would be performed at various points throughout his play. I volunteered to accompany the actors on guitar during the actual performance, which meant that I needed to head out and get some sleep before rehearsals began later in the morning. But since John and I would both be gone by the time the actors arrived around 8 a.m., we needed to convey the song to the group so that they would have something to work with before I got back. That led to a late night or early morning recording session around 4 a.m. Yeah, it's rough, but it got the job done.
Venus in curlers, mountains, women no beauty, men haven't a hint. Venus in curlers, Aphrodite needs a pet. Women need husbands like a hole in the head. Venus in curlers, Aphrodite needs a pearl. Eggs over easy, don't need no moldy mess.
By 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, all of the scripts had been handed in and were being printed. The writers were gone, and I was catching a few hours of sleep. The directors arrived at 7, read all 6 plays, and then decided amongst themselves which play each would work with. The actors arrived around 8, had some breakfast, and then received their scripts. And that's when the rubber met the road. I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Each week we bring you interviews with artists and those who make the arts happen in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you like the show, please let us know. Drop me a line at jason@woodstovehouse.com with any comments, questions, or suggestions. And if you really like the show, consider joining other supporters of the program and drop a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. The tip jar is located in the top right corner of our website, woodstovehouse.com. And now back to this week's program. We're taking a look back to the weekend of November 2nd and 3rd when we hosted Lancaster's 24-Hour Plays 2012.
You're proposing tonight.
I can help with that.
Help with what? I have a question to ask. My line is, will you marry me? I already have it memorized.
Oh, please, let me help. I need a buddy and a best buddy.
By mid-morning, rehearsals were in full swing. While the actors and directors were busy with their initial readings of the scripts, stage manager Vanessa Lefever was building prop lists and figuring out how to collect them.
Joints. They do want a joint.
They want to smoke a joint?
You know
what we can do is...
Stentwater Street.
No. We can just get top tobacco, a pack of it's like 69 cents, and they have papers in them.
What tobacco is 69 cents?
The crap... roll your own. It comes with papers. I mean, look, it's been 5 years since I bought it, so maybe it's $1.20. But it's the crappiest. We could get that and roll it up. I mean, we can't light it in here.
No, I don't know. Can we fashion a cigarette into looking like a joint?
Not really. You need papers.
It's so brittle. That paper's so brittle, isn't it?
You just need papers.
Oh, we just need the paper.
We could empty a cigarette to tobacco, but if you're going to buy papers, you might as well just buy it. You know what I'm talking about? That top.
Oh, yeah, just the paper.
But I mean the top
not
stuff.
Not the tobacco. We can just get that at Sunoco. That's no problem.
At the
gas station.
Gas station. Right there. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Straight down.
Everyone stepped up throughout the day to collect what was needed to make the shows come alive. Sets, costumes, sound effects, all of those little details need to be sorted out as quickly as possible. Everybody wanted the show to be effective, but because time was so short, everything had to be kept simple and efficient. One of the most powerful aspects of an event like this is that each decision affects the entire show, and that there isn't any time for trial and error. Questions are constantly being asked throughout the process, and everyone has to live with whatever decision is made because the clock is ticking and showtime is never more than a handful of hours away. As the afternoon rolled by, everything was falling into place. If we didn't already have everything we needed, we at least knew what we needed and how we were going to get it. Rehearsals were in full swing and were mostly off book. Here's a taste of how that musical was coming along sometime around 4 p.m.
No, we're going to cut it off before...
About 3?
Yeah,
At the end of 3? Because that was 3.
Okay.
At 4:30 in the afternoon, I met with all of the directors, Vanessa the stage manager, and Daryl our light and sound guy, to determine which groups wanted to do one more full run of their plays on stage, and which were okay just walking through technical cues. The split was about 50-50, and the groups prepared for final rehearsals. There was a strange mix of energy in the building during those last couple hours before showtime. It was the same last year. There was the obvious sense that we had crossed the point of no return, so you could feel that anxiety. But because everybody was so exhausted, there was also a calmness. Things were very quiet everywhere but on the stage where the final rehearsals were wrapping up. During those rehearsals, I caught up with director Kevin Ditzler, who also worked with us in 2011. This year, Kevin was working with a script written by Amanda Kemp.
We started, obviously, reading all the pieces is a very interesting. I described it earlier as saying, it's like when the green screen comes up at a movie theater and you're about to see the previews. You know, you get really excited. As a kid, I always remember the previews. I was like, oh, what am I going to see? What am I going to see? And I got really, really excited. You always get really, really excited to see what these scripts are going to be because they're so different. The voices of the writers are so unique that you just don't know one script to the next what you're going to get. They're so different. So just starting that process and reading all the scripts is really exciting. And then battling out with the directors to figure out who's number one script. Usually a couple scripts kind of surface as everybody's top one, two, three. And then there are a couple that people go, yeah, I like that one, but I'm not sure where to go visually with it. Mm-hmm. And so they have to sort out. We had to sort out where we were going to go with it. And that's such an interesting process to see what speaks to people as directors from what the writers have written, and what they take and then put on the stage.
What do you think? Do directors look at it as what is easy, or as what they immediately see? Like, what's the criteria?
I think it's different for every occasion. For this one, for me, I saw a show that I could stylistically block. I had a vision of it, and I think a couple people said that they didn't have a vision for it. So they kind of went, I like it, I just don't know what to do with it. And for me, it became very clear very quickly, some of the themes that emerged, what I wanted to do with it. So some of it's, they want to work with comedy, or they want to, you know, they have a style that they want to bring out, or they have some characters that they want to, you know, look mm-hmm. into. And some of it can be just quite frankly, maybe I don't have the best relationship with one of the actors on that, and I'm going to let somebody else deal with that out of respect for the situation. So really, a lot of things go into determining who gets what. Some people can actually wind up with a show that they didn't love because they put it as their number three on the
yeah.
list. So it's interesting to see how that process works out.
I'd love to find out, though, when people end up with a show that's lower, a script that's lower on their priority list when they first read them, I'd be curious to know if that changes, if there's a point at which they start to, because, you know, you read these things, you're here at 7 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
right? And who knows how late you got home the night before and how much sleep you actually got. You walk into 7 a.m., you read all six scripts, and then you got to prioritize.
Yeah. Well, even mine, my idea didn't come until somebody talked about the script that I was looking at. It didn't really speak to me, and then somebody said, well, you know, I like this theme. And I went, ooh, you know, I could explore that in this way. And so it didn't even emerge in my brain until halfway after reading the script and moving on to another one when somebody said, you know, this is interesting to me.
Yeah.
So I found it funny that even the script that I'm now with that I think is incredible and visually interesting, the visual pictures are interesting and the themes are really strong, it didn't emerge as one of my immediate favorites until somebody said, hey, you know, I like this theme, and have you considered this? And all of a sudden, it clicked with me. I'm like, I know exactly what that is.
Was that another director?
Yeah, another director. Okay. Brittany actually said out loud, hey, this occurs to me. And immediately I went, oh, it hadn't occurred to me. So maybe it was because I hadn't drank enough coffee at that point in my morning. But once it did occur to me, I saw right where this script was going. The only thing I wanted to do was speak to the writer a little bit because there were some themes in there and some things, some references that I wasn't quite sure of, why she named the characters what she did. So I investigated with her a little bit just to
okay.
get a feel for why she named the characters. And it was clear that she had very specific reasons. So once I got that information, it lit the way for me. The path was clear, so it was very interesting to even get her insight just briefly.
Yeah, I don't think we've had writers interact much with the directors. At least last year, I don't think any of the writers communicated back to the directors.
So no, she called in. She called in, and so I gave her a call back and said, you know, here's where we stand. What were you looking for? And she actually just wanted to make sure that a theme that she had brought in at the beginning surfaced at the end.
Okay.
She wasn't sure that she had built it in, and she had. And so we said, no, it's there, and it's a strong theme, and you did a wonderful job. And once you put voices to it, the actors to it, it all just clears
yeah.
up. So once the actors were there, her script just really emerged as something that I knew what we needed to do with it.
That's great. That's Amanda Kemp who wrote that piece as well. It's
yeah.
Song of Songs is the name of it. It's interesting for me because I have stayed up really, really late and helped the writers read,
mm-hmm.
and I'm horrible at that. So I really don't get the impact of these scripts as I'm like, you know, my brain's mush. It's 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm right. sitting there trying to read in some sort of artistic way what they're trying to say. So watching these rehearsals today, it's just, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. I think even as a director, you don't know what's going to emerge until it comes out of an actor's mouth. And some of the things you simply can't identify with. Amanda's an African-American writer, and she wrote specifically in this play for an African-American actor. So I obviously can't, you know, take those themes and articulate them as he can. So hearing things come from his mouth cleared up very quickly a struggle that I haven't had in my life
yeah.
and why she turns it on its ear very uniquely. And so I couldn't relate as much as he could. So when I said, I'm not sure I understand this theme, he immediately did. And so being able to bring that aspect to it, an actor is always key in really bringing a perspective that you didn't see yourself. And being able to absorb that and then put it on the stage is really important.
Finally, the time had come. We began welcoming guests into the performance space on Saturday evening at about 20 till 7. For the second year, musician Tim Baum joined us to perform his brand of ambient experimental music before the show and between each play. Equipped with a couple synthesizers, an oboe, flutes, and two guitars being strummed by plastic paddles that were attached to vinyl records spinning on customized turntable motors, Tim set an experimental yet welcoming tone for the evening. We had over 150 people, including the participants, pack into our temporary theater to witness the outcome of 24 hours of creative chaos for that public performance that started at 7 p.m. The show stretched to well over 90 minutes, and the plays were as diverse as the crew that we managed to pull together. Our six writers took us to six very different places, and our six directors and 20 actors provided us with some very powerful and unique experiences, from the lighthearted and campy to the dramatic and the darkest of dark. A pure sense of accomplishment and relief descended over the building as the final play of the evening came to a close.
Oh, if you manage to fix this, well, you'll be a shoo-in to get through those gates.
Lancaster's 24-Hour Plays 2012 is in the books. It has been a true pleasure for Woodstove House to work with another incredible crew of the region's finest theater artists. We also couldn't have pulled it off without the help of our sponsors and supporters. Lemon Street Market, Sala Thai, Shoemaker Plan Design Transform, the Pennsylvania Guild of Craftsmen, Two Dudes Painting Company, Chestnut Hill Cafe, Antonio's Pizza, Dr. Matthew Freeman, DDS, New School of Lancaster, and Community Mennonite Church of Lancaster. A huge thanks to all of our sponsors, the participants, and the wonderful audience that came out to share the evening with us. You can find out more about Lancaster's 24-Hour Plays 2012, including a full list of credits on the show post for this episode at our website, woodstovehouse.com. And while you're there, you can check out past episodes of the program, subscribe to the show, or leave a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. If you like what you hear, please drop a comment on the show post, give us a good rating on iTunes, and be sure to tell your friends about the show. Around the Wood Stove was produced at the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You can find us online at woodstovehouse.com.